Positive culture really has an impact on so many different people. It has an impact on directly on your team. It has an impact on your clients and customers. It has an impact on your suppliers. It has an impact on your shareholders. It has an impact, a secondary impact, on the families of people that I just named. So I often tell people that whether you are a leader by title or a leader by role, or a leader in life, one way or another, you will be a leader. And the way that you treat the people that you work with then trickles down to the other people that those people touch.
Every CEO wakes up each morning with a choice, and how they choose can be the difference between burnout and breakthrough. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is Scott White. Scott is a former public company CEO, entrepreneur, and he's a coach here at CEO Coaching International. He led one of the fastest growing public companies in North America. He built award-winning teams and culture, and today he helps CEOs grow exceptional businesses and lives by combining a disciplined execution with happiness, gratitude, and positivity. In today's show, we explore one of the most overlooked drivers of performance, which is perspective. Scott shares why positivity isn't just a soft skill. It's a leadership superpower. He tells the story of how one powerful email experiment changed how his team viewed reality. He talks about the practical tools to build a culture of optimism and accountability. He shared a study on the surprising ROI of happy teams and how to create them. And he tells why you can't make it alone and how social connection impacts success and longevity. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Scott White. I would say that perspective is one of the most underrated tools in the CEO's arsenal, and it costs nothing, yet it could change everything in different circumstances. It could change how you lead, it could change how you respond to pressure, how your team shows up when times get tough. And one of the interesting things about perspective is you're always choosing one, whether you do it intentionally or not. So I know perspective is something that's important to you, Scott. So how do you think about perspective as a leader, as an entrepreneur, and working with your team?
Oh, I think it's the most powerful tool in the CEO's toolbox. I think it is. People don't focus on what is my perspective. I talk about the power of positivity and how you view the world, not just when you show up at work, but when you show up in your home, when you show up with your family, when you show up with your friends. But boy, when you could bring that positive lens and that perspective to the office, to your leadership, to the C-suite, it transforms a company.
So, how do you do that without the power of positivity falling into a cliche and people just sort of rolling their eyes?
Well, you got to believe it. You have to understand it. You have to believe in the power of it. So it's a great question, Steve, because if people just sort of put on a smile and put on their, let's say, game face, oh, I'm going to work and everything is great, it's not authentic. It's not true and it doesn't do anything. However, if you realize and recognize everything isn't always great. That's not reality. That's not the world we live in. If you understand that life has setbacks, twists and turns along the journey, yet you learn how to, and it's a learned skill, put on that positive lens, that positive perspective, find the way through, the way forward, find the good in everything. It is an incredibly powerful tool for leading, for growing, for building great teams and great companies.
Some people might think this is a soft topic or it's sort of the soft aspect of leadership, and I suspect that you're not going to agree with that idea. So I'd love it if you could give me like a concrete example of how you've used this idea of positivity or the kind of lens that you bring to it. Is there like an example of a situation where you've actually used this idea?
So first of all, calling it a soft skill or a soft topic or whatever is great. That's fantastic. Again, that's about the lens, right? To assume that something is a soft skill may not be as important. I would argue that having the right soft skills might be more powerful than having the hard skills. Hard skills are easy to hire. Soft skills have to be learned, have to be taught, have to be imbued in the leadership team. Let me give you an example, Steve, of how I brought this skill to the office. and how I've demonstrated to teams the importance of a lens. So a few years ago, February 1st, February is a tough month, especially if you live in the Northeast. At the time, I was running a company in Indiana, living in New Jersey. And on February 1st, I was the chairman and CEO of a public real estate company. And I sent an email to the entire team that read as follows. It's really cold. It's dreary and miserable. It's the middle of winter. The days are short. The temperatures are low. February 1 may very well be one of the most challenging days of the year. Not much daylight. A long way from the fall season and what seems like a very long way to spring. No really great fun holidays in January or February. We're homeless. We don't have an office. We haven't seen each other in person in months. We're dealing with a number of meaningful challenges in our portfolio and in our industry. COVID lingers and lingers. Every day seems like a new fire to fight. At times, it feels hopeless and draining. This just sucks and I'm tired. That email sent to the entire company from a chairman and CEO who talks a lot about positivity, about culture, about, you know, we've been recognized for a few years in a row as one of the best places to work. And as you hear that, you're probably thinking, best places to work? I'm glad I don't work for that guy.
That doesn't sound very positive to me.
So 10 minutes later, I sent the following email. Today is the best day of my life. The sun is shining. I work with an amazing team. I'm truly inspired by and appreciate each of you. I am grateful for our company and you being a part of it. I am truly grateful to be alive and healthy and smiling. I'm fired up and motivated to conquer the opportunities we have ahead of us. I love the intellectual stimulation of working with you to win. We're making considerable progress on many fronts. We made so much progress in 2021, and our plan for 2022 is robust. Our new office is going to be amazing. I anxiously await our arrival there and the relaunch of our company. Life couldn't possibly be better. Here's the beauty, Steve. Same day, same method of sharing the message, email, same facts, same exact word count. You know how long it took me to get those word counts to match? Think about the different perspective, the different lens, how you feel when you heard each of those emails. This is the power of perspective. This is the power of positivity.
What kind of feedback did you get? You said the first one, you waited 10 minutes to send the second one. Did you get any feedback within those 10 minutes?
So nobody actually came in or said anything in between. I think people were surprised and trying to figure out what it was about. But afterwards, we actually, certainly within the executive team and even more broadly within the company, we had talked about, and I sort of drove home the point that I'm making here. Think about how different you felt. Same facts, same word count, same transmission of message, yet an entirely different story. It really resonated. And people to this day, it's now, I guess, 4 years later, have talked about what that social experiment meant to them and sort of an eye-opening opportunity to really self-reflect and think about how do I approach issues, setbacks, twists and turns in the road?
We had Jim Collins speak at the CEO Coaching Summit here in 2025. And one of the stories that he talks about in one of his books is this idea of the Stockdale paradox. You're probably familiar with it.
Yep.
So he had interviewed Admiral James Stockdale, who was like the highest ranking prisoner in Vietnam. I think he was a prisoner there for like 8 years. And so Collins had asked him, how did you survive? And Stockdale said, well, one of the key things was you had to have a clear understanding of the brutal reality of your current situation, but you also had to have the optimism that at the end of the day, you're actually going to get out of here. And he said, people who did not confront the brutal reality while also keeping this longer term perspective that I'm going to get out of here, those were the ones, you know, who essentially didn't make it. Yep. So as you think about these two, so the first email, I could sort of correlate to that sort of your brutal reality. Then the second one is, we're eventually going to get past this COVID situation and so on and so forth. So do you think of it in those terms? How do you play with, okay, the situation may not be real good with the idea that I want to be positive without just being Pollyannish here?
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com.
Right. So the Stockdale principle and what it talks about is unreasonable expectations. And as you listen to both those emails, I didn't in any way set an expectation of, you know, we're going to go from, let's just make this up and not real numbers, $5 million this year to $500 million. That's not reality. I didn't make up an expectation of all of a sudden we're going to be the fastest growing public company in North America. What I did is I took the facts and I put a lens on those facts of, yes, while it is reality that it's February, it's cold, the days are short, it's also an opportunity to look through the lens of, we made progress last year, we're going to make more progress. You know, think about the language I used was, we made so much progress in 2021 and our plan for 2022 is robust. I didn't say our plan for 2022 is going to make us the number one company in the world. Because again, to your point, if you're too Pollyanna-ish or you are not reasonable in setting expectations, then you lose credibility, you lose your audience. So you do have to be reasonable and balance that, but you could do it through a positive lens. And the lens that I talk about is how you view the facts.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second here. Is there any concern or have you run into situations where if you view this through a positivity lens, that it reduces the sense of urgency on the part of team members to do what needs to be done? Because you are, let's say, in a difficult situation, and yes, you're sort of confronting the facts, but you're also putting the positive lens onto it. Have you ever had a situation where people lose the sense of urgency because you're painting this positive lens?
No, because again, you have to paint reality. And I think by creating a positive culture, a positive lens, you have a team that wants to succeed. So if in my experience and observations, if you have a team where everyone is questioning, doubting, disappointed, negative, then creating a false sense, or let's not even say false, a sense of urgency. And not everyone's bought in. Not everyone is rowing in the same direction. Not everyone sees the bigger goal and the bigger vision. If you turn that on its head and flip the coin over and say, well, instead, let's focus on positivity, gratefulness, happiness. Let's all be rowing in the same direction. Let's set a clear vision and buy into that vision and work towards accomplishing that. Then people will be self-motivated to understand the level of urgency rather than creating an artificial sense of urgency. Or what I negatively, and now I'm going to be, you know, use the negative lens for a minute, refer to as a command and control sort of leadership. I'd much rather have a leadership and a culture where everyone is working together for a common good instead of a leadership where this is urgent, get it done by 5 o'clock today, or we're not going to make it. You know, that's just not an environment that I would want to work in. And that's an environment that I think breeds a successful long-term business.
You mentioned culture there, so I want to go a little deeper with that. So how do you imbue this positivity lens throughout the culture? Clearly, you as the leader, you're all about that, but how do you make it permeate the rest of the organization? What kind of impact does that have on the performance? What kind of impact might that have on other stakeholders besides your employees?
There's no doubt it comes from the top down. So if your leader hasn't bought into the power of positivity and bought into a positive leadership culture, then I think it's very difficult to have an organization that is going to make that a priority. You have to make that vision clear. So I think every successful company has a clear vision that everyone is heading in the same direction. Every successful company has clear values, and you build this into your values. You then hire those that believe in and imbue the same values that you're setting for the company. You also reward based on those values and that mission. And you also retain or not retain those based in part on buying into the culture, on being a part of the culture. So culture doesn't work when top down, the CEO says, here is what we stand for. And those that are part of the organization haven't bought in, don't understand it, can't explain it, don't live it. That doesn't work. What you do is you set a clear vision, you set values, you get buy-in and alignment. Alignment's so vitally important, and you build a team that is completely bought into that. So what does that mean? Because, you know, the next question is, so why? What does it matter? Well, first of all, you have a more pleasant work environment. Second of all, you have a place where people want to succeed. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy of you want to see growth. You want to succeed. We're all in this together, as opposed to an us versus them culture. You know, I talked about that fearful leader that, you know, I'm in management. I'm not in management. I'm a leader. I'm not a leader. You get everyone on the same page, working together to get greater efficiency, to get greater profitability. There have been ample studies that demonstrate that positive work cultures have a much better ROI. One that I recently read that positive workplace cultures have a 4x ROI over negative workplace cultures. Positive workplace cultures have greater longevity in terms of retention. You know, one of the number one reasons people leave organizations or jobs is because of the person or team they work for, and they haven't bought into it. They don't like that person. It's not necessarily for greater responsibility or greater compensation. Long-term retention is often tied to working with people you enjoy working with, working for a leader that you've bought into, that you enjoy working with and being a part of. So when you think about the power of positivity, the power of a positive culture, you attract talented candidates, you retain them longer, you generate greater profitability, and just, you know, hang out there one more time. Let me say it. Positive workplace cultures have a 4x return on investment over negative workplace cultures. That's powerful, Steve.
Okay. So how do you define what is a positive culture? So you talk about these studies that you just quoted here. What would be the characteristics of that culture? And, you know, you mentioned like values, for example, and I'm also curious, like what would be examples of quote positive values that you actually have used in your organizations?
As simple as we work together with a sense of positivity and urgency. That was a value I had at a company that I was running for a while. We worked together with a sense of value and urgency. So I wove together the urgency and the positivity there. We talk about things like family. We talk about things like gratefulness. We talk about things like having a positive impact on the various stakeholders. You know, you talked a little bit about stakeholders before. You know, the positive culture really has an impact on so many different people. It has an impact on directly on your team. It has an impact on your clients and customers. It has an impact on your suppliers. It has an impact on your shareholders. It has an impact, a secondary impact, on the families of people that I just named. So I often tell people that whether you are a leader by title or a leader by role or a leader in life, one way or another, you will be a leader. And the way that you treat the people that you work with then trickles down to the other people that those people touch. What do I mean by that? Well, the ripple effect. So if you have set a positive culture of gratefulness, happiness, positivity, you reward people, you recognize people, you make them feel like they are contributing in a meaningful way, that person then goes home and treats their spouse in a similar way, goes home and treats their children in a similar way. And it has a ripple effect on all the people involved in the company.
It's sounding like this is like a muscle, in that you have to like continue to exercise that muscle, this positivity lens each day. And if you don't, it's just going to atrophy. So are there any, like, just like with weightlifting to build muscles, are there any practices that you recommend to really have this positivity lens?
Yeah. So the beauty of it, Steve, is that it requires so little to start heading in this direction. You need to be thoughtful. You need to be deliberate. You need to be proactive in thinking about it. So what are some of the simplest tools? Well, the simplest one that I like to tell people is smile. Literally just smile. And I speak around the country before audiences all the time. And I lay this out there and then I pause. I say, what is the easiest tool or easiest trick? I go, smile. And then I just let it hang there. And it is absolutely amazing. 100%, not 90%, 100% of the time, you see this ripple across the audience, no matter how big or small the audience is. One person smiles, another person smiles. All of a sudden, you're looking around. A lot of people are smiling. They're looking around, wait, am I supposed to be smiling now? And I say to people, well, think about how you feel right now versus how you felt a few seconds ago. It has been demonstrated through various empirical evidence and studies that the mere act of smiling can make you up to 20% happier. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, use it as a tool. When you show up in the office in the morning, smile. When you walk into somebody's office, smile. When you're at lunch, smile. When you're grabbing a cup of coffee, smile. When you get home and you walk in the door, instead of starting with what a challenging day you may have had, smile. Take a deep breath and think about how it feels. Think about the impact it has on others. Let me give you another tool that I often tell people about that is so simple, yet so powerful. And that's the beauty of this, is so much of it is so simple. So I often ask people, do you remember your very first thought when you opened your eyes this morning? And I will tell you, I've spoken to thousands of people across the United States, and about 20% of the people usually raise their hand. You know, your very first thought was X. As you drill down, most of the people that raise their hand, remember, it's only about 20%, will give you a fairly benign response. So, you know, my first thought when I open my eyes is, oh, I could use a cup of coffee, or, oh, I have to go to the bathroom, or I don't feel like getting up, right? It's nondescript. I tell people each day, I do this all the time, reach over to your dresser and grab your glasses and put them on. Very first thing, you open your eyes, you shut off your alarm, reach over and put your glasses on. If you don't have glasses, put on pretend glasses. Literally make a little circle with your fingers and put on pretend glasses. And it sounds ridiculous, but the physical act of doing this is really important. Put on your glasses. And instead of what I call right there, kind of blurry glasses, and avoid the muddy glasses, because some people put on the, ugh, it's Wednesday, I'm tired, it's cold, I don't feel like getting up, I have so much to do, I hate my life. Unfortunately, people do that. Why not put on those crystal clear, bright glasses, make a scene of putting these glasses on, open your eyes, and to your point, Steve, exercise that muscle of, when I open my eyes this morning, which by the way, I had a flight to catch, so it was a 4:30 wake up, I open my eyes this morning, and my first thoughts were, wow, I get to go travel to see a client today. That's wonderful. I get to be on Steve's show. Literally, as I'm going through my calendar quickly in my head, that's wonderful. Wait, I'm in bed next to the woman I love. One of my children is home from college. She's heading off to college in a couple of days. And that was a real example of how I started my day this morning. Four or five things within 10 seconds that I'm excited, I'm positive, I'm grateful for. I understand that I can't control everything in my life and throughout the day. I can control my first thought. And as Henry Ford said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Why not set the roadmap for the day, one of positivity, gratefulness, setting in a positive direction? Again, you can't control everything, but you can control the direction you're heading off in.
Companies that you've led have been awarded like best places to work. So obviously this idea of positivity, I'm sure, has a big impact on that. So tell me a little bit more about becoming a best place to work. How do you embed these ideas of positivity into the organization that ultimately lead to being awarded a best place to work?
So the public company that I ran, we were recognized 5 or 6 years in a row as one of the best places to work. And the beauty of that recognition that I'm most proud of is it's driven almost entirely by employee surveys. So this isn't, you know, me filling out a questionnaire or a PR firm applying. It's literally based on employee surveys. So how do you create a best place to work? Well, first of all, it starts with the culture. It starts with setting a tone of respect, of gratefulness, of positivity, of happiness, of appreciating people, of showing them they're part of the team, of giving people the independence to work, to enjoy life, of not focusing on a command and control type leadership. You get buy-in. As I said before, you attract and retain people that are bought into the values of the company, that are bought into the culture of the company, that are bought into the mission of the company, that want to be a part of it, that are quite proud to tell the world, I work for X. I am part of the X team, whatever that is. And it has some real positive implications for the company. As I said before, and it's been demonstrated over and over again, you get a more positive ROI in positive cultures, and you get much better retention. And as we all know, in every economy, it is always difficult to hire and retain the very best people. Many of them end up at workplaces that have positive cultures and places they feel like they are part of the team.
What would you say, Scott, are some practical takeaways here? Like if someone's listening to this and they say, hey, I need this, like what are some things I can do, you know, starting today as a leader?
Well, first of all, smile. Right. That's the easiest one. That's the low hanging fruit. It sounds so ridiculous that anyone listening to it is like, all right, come on, really? That's what I'm listening to? Okay. Well, I challenge you. I challenge you today to smile more and think about how you feel and watch the world around you. Okay, so there's one takeaway. Two, put on those glasses tomorrow morning and every day. Try it for a week or two. Give it a real positive try to physically put on those glasses, those lenses, and go about your day and focus on positivity. What about random acts of kindness? When was the last time you performed a random act of kindness within your organization, a friend, a family? You know, it's not only about business. I really like people to think about their lives holistically, because happy people at home, happy people in clubs, in religious organizations, in hobbies, in whatever it is you do in your life, if you embrace it with a sense of positivity, you bring that to the workplace, you bring that to what you do. Another tool that I often talk about is celebrate. Celebrate wins, call out and recognize people that have demonstrated success. You know, we all don't have to win a Nobel Prize. We all don't have to win a gold medal or find the cure for cancer. We could celebrate small wins every day. Celebrate wins with your family. Celebrate wins with your team. Celebrate wins with your company. Celebrate wins every day. There are, Steve, like three or four quick tools that I'd be happy to talk a lot more about any one of those. And I have so many more of these quick and easy tools for people to adapt.
Well, I want to wrap up here with two things. So one is, are there any other tools you want to share, or is there any other final thought, comment, observation about this that you want to touch on?
So I think the one thing we haven't covered that I think is so important is a principle that I call can't make it alone. We live in an interconnected society where we have epidemic numbers of loneliness. We have people that haven't developed the strength and depth of a social network that's vitally important to long-term success, vitally important to happiness and health. And, you know, I refer to a study that's been ongoing now since the 1930s, started at Harvard. It's the Harvard study on what makes a good life, where originally 256 Harvard sophomores, all males, were studied in the 1930s on what makes a good life. And then in the 1940s, about 456 inner city Boston area youth were added to this study. And those 800 or so people have been followed for the last 80 plus years, the original participants, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, to focus on what makes a good life. And the key takeaway, the most important thing for long-term happiness and health, is the power of your social network, the power of the people you surround yourself with. And when you extract that and take it into the business place, into the company, think about the power of the people you surround yourself with. Develop relationships, get to know people on your team personally and professionally, and create that culture, that workplace environment where we're all going to win together.
We have social media today. So how do you think about social media? We have Facebook friends. We have people that follow us on Instagram or what have you. I know that's not the kind of relationships that you're talking about here. You know, the younger generation, they sort of grow up on social media. So as a leader, how do you get them to like engage in real life with each other as opposed to just communicating via our phones?
Yeah, there's no doubt that when I talk about the power of the social network, it means those true relationships with people you can count on, people that you know are there for you and that you are there for. It's not the number of Facebook followers or likes or TikTok posts or anything like that. It's knowing that someone is going to be there for you. You know, one of the takeaways from that same study that I absolutely love, and I think this is a defining kind of takeaway to understand my point, those at age 50 who self-identified, so there isn't an empirical test for this, there isn't an empirical sort of number of friends, but self-identified as having the strongest social network, they're asked about their social network, those that identified at age 50 as having the strongest social network, 30 years later, at age 80, they were the physically healthiest, the mentally healthiest, you think about aging and dementia and Alzheimer's, and they were the happiest. Think about that. I find that to be one of the most compelling and powerful stats. Those at age 50 who self-identified as having the strongest social network, 30 years later, physically strongest, mentally strongest, happiest, healthiest overall. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. And I've got I'll call it a sample size of one here with my parents. So my dad is 95, my mom is 91. And for many, many decades, they had a social group where they would have like a monthly dinner group. They'd play cards. They would get together on New Year's Eve and have parties, and they'd even vacation together from time to time. So they had this really strong network, I'm going to say for like 50 to 60 years, of pretty much the same group of people. And my parents are actually the only two surviving from that group. But, you know, here they are in their mid-90s and they're still living independently. So I definitely attribute some of their longevity to this fact that they had a really tight social group. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. And as you mentioned, you know, we have this epidemic of loneliness. It's not something new. It's been around for quite a while. So, and social media, I think, sort of exacerbates that too, kind of gives us a false sense that we actually have some friends out there, but they're not our 3 a.m. in the morning friends, people that we can call right in the middle of the night type thing. So good. Appreciate you sharing that. Okay. Final thing I want to touch on here is you're a coach here at CEO Coaching International. So tell me a little bit more about you as a coach. What are you trying to accomplish with your coachees?
My philosophy is to try to take what I've learned in various roles. So I grew up on Wall Street, an M&A banker, and spent 15 years doing that. Then I took a company public and grew it as chairman and CEO. We were one of the fastest growing public companies in North America for about 3 or 4 years. Started a student housing development business. So I have a number of entrepreneurial endeavors, a number of experiences across different businesses. I want to take that and intersect it with this powerful belief in the power of happiness, gratitude, positivity. What I'd say in a sentence or two is, you know, I help CEOs build extraordinary businesses and lives by combining disciplined execution with happiness, gratitude, and positivity. That's how I'd sum up my coaching philosophy in a sentence.
Well, Scott, appreciate you being on the show here today. And for each of you listening, if you want to learn more about Scott, you can check him out at CEOCoachingInternational.com.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.